art, it's still an amazing achievement. Very few people get ranked first.
You did, I say flatly.
For a moment, she doesn't speak, but watches me anxiously for signs of tears or anger. Then I throw my arms around her.
Oh, Mom, I'm so proud of you. You deserve it.
And she does. She's a better person than me, with straightforward priorities. She knows exactly how a human should act to be a part of the natural world. She might have been born in Eden, but she belongs here. She doesn't question everything. She's like an animal in the ecosystem. She has a place, and she fits it perfectly.
I'm sorry, she tries to say, but I shush her immediately, telling her over and over how proud and happy I am for her.
To myself, I'm thinking that this might even be better. The elders already suspect me. I tried so hard to get back to Eden, to solicit their help when I first came here, that even with the top ranking, they probably wouldn't trust me with all the information I need. Mom, on the other hand, is so perfectly adapted to Harmonia that they won't keep anything from her. She'll be an elder, with all the secrets and responsibilities that go along with it. And of course, she'll be able to use that knowledge to help me get back to Eden. Won't she? For a moment, I have doubts. No, she loves Ash. For his sake, if not for the sake of my friends or the other second children, she'd risk it.
Let's celebrate, I say. Who knows? Maybe I'll even congratulate Xander. I just won't shake his hand.
I flex my fingers, which I just now notice feel almost completely better. Did someone heal me while I was unconscious after the last test? Tentatively, I ask Arrow, but she can't remember that either.
Rowan, listen. I want you to stay inside today, okay?
My mom's voice is strained, and I can see twin lines of tension between her eyebrows.
Why?
You had a hard day yesterday, she stammers as she draws me away from the village green.
So did you, and you're outside, I point out. What's wrong?
She hesitates.
Tell me.
There's some trouble in the village.
About me?
No, well, no, not really. But it will be better if you stay away. Easier.
Easier for who?
Oh, sweetheart, it will just upset you. She's maneuvered me halfway back to our house now. Trust me, and stay home for today. I'll do my best to take care of it. I'll have a say now that I'm an elder.
Take care of what?
I just barely managed not to shout.
You can't hide things from me, Mom. You can't protect me. After all I've been through, I deserve better. What is going on?
She draws a deep breath and lets it out again with a sigh. When we get in the house, I'll tell you. Dutifully, I follow her inside. She gets a glass of water and takes a long drink before saying, There's a stranger in the village. Someone from Eden.
What?
I stare at her with wide eyes, my mouth agape, as she tells me what happened that morning as I slept. Early that morning, as Mom was getting her first instruction on the responsibilities and privileges of being an elder, a signal came in. She explained to me that there are monitors all around Eden that scan for human activity, so that when Ecopan releases someone, the elders of Harmonia can go to meet them. Normally, they would receive a communication from Ecopan beforehand. That someone would appear without warning was unusual and troubling.
Usually only the elders can go on the hypertubes, Mom said.
But they made an exception for me when you arrived, since it was the first time any two people from the same family were chosen. They didn't know why. They just got word to include me that day. We only found out once I saw who Ecopan had sent out. Mom was chosen to go with Elder Knight and a few others to investigate. It was a good way to begin her training, see how she handled herself in a real crisis. When we got there, we found a man, half dead of thirst and heatstroke. He was just beyond the desert, staggering, gasping out incoherent things about war and hope.
When he saw us, he passed out almost immediately. My heart feels raw. I know it can't be anyone I know. There are a million people in Eden. And yet, we weren't sure what to do. We had no instructions from Ecopan. The elders wanted to follow protocol, but didn't want to act hastily. So we took him back, and waited for word from Ecopan. We thought maybe it had forgotten to tell us. I mean, it has a lot on its mind. On its chips. Processors? Did Ecopan contact you? I ask, breathless. No. We think he's an escapee. She shakes her head. The elders are debating about what to do. What do you mean, what to do? What is there to do? You give him food, water, medical care, shelter. You welcome him. It's not that simple, she says sadly. He hasn't been chosen. He is a corrupt member of Eden. He doesn't belong here. I look at her, aghast. You sound like Xander. I don't hate people from Eden like he does, but I don't trust them either. You know what they're like as well as I do. Most of them, anyway. They can't be trusted here in the natural world. This isn't you talking, Mom. I'm an elder now. My first responsibility is to keep Harmonia safe. I argued in his favor, Rowan. I spoke for him. But it wasn't any use. I don't agree with the elder's decision, but I understand why they made it. What decision? You can't send him back. No, she says gently. They aren't going to do that. I sigh with relief. Well, that's good. So what? He has to live in isolation, under guard? That's understandable. It will take time for him to learn about our ways. No, sweetheart. They decided... She swallows hard. They decided it's too dangerous to let him live. XIII. This is supposed to be a paradise? I ask as I pace back and forth in our common room. A place where we all live in peace and harmony. And the elders, supposedly the most wise, calm people here, have decided to kill a refugee? Rowan, it's not that simple, Mom soothes. It is exactly that simple, I rant. This man has escaped from a terrible place, a prison he was sentenced to before he was born. You know as well as I do what it is like. Calm down for a minute, she says, which she should know is exactly the thing that will not calm someone down, especially me. This is why I wanted you to stay home. I know this is upsetting, to you in particular. And it is to me, too. But this is a matter for the elders to decide. We have laws here. Laws that apparently make murder legal, I snap. Mom, I don't understand why you're not up in arms against this. This crime against humanity. This poor man managed to escape, looking for sanctuary. We need to help him, not kill him. Why, it could be a second child. It could be Ash. It's not, Mom says. Who is it? What's his name? She shakes her head. He hasn't regained consciousness since we put him in the hypertube. He's not old, 20s I'd say, but he could be younger or older. He has a beard, and he's pretty dirty and blistered from the desert, so it's hard to tell. We will talk to him before the final decision is made, but right now, the elders seem set on it. It's so wrong. I agree, but they are weighing one man's life against the future of humanity and the Earth itself. That's a little extreme, don't you think? She takes my hands and pulls me onto a long cushion on the ground that serves as our sofa. You're right. One man doesn't matter. He could live with us, and everything would probably be okay. But what about the next man? And the one after that. He is the only one to ever succeed. Not true. You did it once, Mom points out. Maybe things are changing in Eden. New technology could let people cross the desert. A hacker could shut it down. A new government, or rebel group, could put so much pressure on the society in Eden that escape is the only option. This man is like a bacteria. Most of the time, people don't get sick from just one bacteria. But if there are more bacteria, and they start to spread, before you know it, you have a disease. This man is the first symptom of a disease that could wipe out Harmonia.
Then keep him prisoner, I say desperately. Take a month, a year, and see if anyone else comes.
Mom shakes her head. This place succeeds because only certain kinds of people are allowed to live here.
Give this man a chance to prove that he's like us. If he escaped, he is resourceful. He hates Eden. He longs for the real natural world. I'm sure of it.
You're still very young, Rowan. An idealist. What if he is a murderer, fleeing persecution? What if he was sent by the center to infiltrate us?
I admit, that is entirely possible. But 300 people can keep one person under control, watched and guarded, no matter what his story is, I insist.
But he was not chosen. He is not pure. What if he speaks his poison to the young people of Harmonia?
Why walk when you could drive, he might say. Why not use plastic? What harm could just a little do? And it is so convenient.
Then, before you know it, it would be why nuts when you could slaughter an animal for its flesh. I know people inside Eden claim to respect the Earth, but that is because they have no choice. Turned loose, there is no knowing what any of them would do.
Part of me can see what she is saying, but in my heart, I know it is wrong. Everyone needs to be given a chance. No one is inherently criminal because of where they were born.
I want to yell at her, to argue. I want to storm to the Hall of Elders and demand to see this man from Eden, fight them with words or fists until he is released. But I know I have to be clever about this. So I nod, still frowning, and say, I get it, Mom. What we have here is too precious to risk.
But what if he is worthy? What if in escaping he passed Ecopan's tests?
Couldn't Ecopan have stopped him from escaping if it wanted to?
Who are we to judge him?
This gives her pause, and I press on. I knew a lot of the rebels of Eden after you left. People who love the Earth and humanity and were fighting for a better world. The second children know about community. They were exactly like the people of Harmonia. With their leaders sometimes wearing blinders, their humanity taking second place to the good of their tribe, I think, but don't add.
If it is one of the second children, or someone who has been helping them, maybe the elders will give them a chance.
Well, anyone could say they were a rebel, just to get on our good side.
I know all of the second children, I remind her, as well as a lot of the people who helped them. If I can take a look at this man, if I know he's one of the good and trustworthy ones, it will give you ammunition to help save his life.
You do want to save him, don't you?
Of course, she says, as long as there is no threat to Harmonia.
Then let me see him. Just a quick look. If I know him, I'll vouch for him. If not, then I'll have to accept whatever the elders decide.
I force a resigned look on my face.
Mom buys it.
They might not agree, but I'll try.
Together we go to the Hall of Elders, and at the heart of its warm wooden interior, I present my case for seeing the escapee. It is all I can do not to rant, to beg, to try to assert my will over theirs. But I make myself speak calmly, rationally, as if I don't have a real stake in the matter. Inside, I feel like I'm falling apart. The elders listen as I speak, with my mom standing beside me.
You are full of compassion, child, Elder Knight says. That is an admirable quality, a most humane quality. But it must be tempered with hard, cold practicality.
I know you don't remember, but during the third test you showed that you will let compassion override your duty to the Earth and your guilt as a human. Guilt you and I and everyone here must constantly work to expiate, even unto the cost of our lives. She comes nearer and takes me by the shoulders. What good will it do you to see him when his fate is sealed? Her voice is so gentle, yet her words are deadly. Nothing either you or he can say will alter the unpleasant necessity. The kindest thing would be to... I can tell she's weighing the next words carefully. Euthanize him while he is still unconscious. She could have said murder. That's what it is, really. Or assassinate. After all, he is being killed for political reasons. Euthanize, though, sounds clinical and humane. Once, Mira, in tears, ran back from the fields with a little grass snake in her hands. She had accidentally wounded it with her spade while she was weeding. The elders said it couldn't be saved, and killed it as mercifully as possible. This Eden escapee is like that to them. Unsalvageable. So he has to be put down. I understand, I say, bowing my head. It is for the good of Harmonia. No matter how hard it is, I know you will always do what is right. I hope I always do likewise. Elder Knight nods in approval, but before she can turn to go, I add, Still, I think you should wait until he awakes. If he is the first of a wave of escapees, you should know. If there is even the slightest chance that more people might follow him, you should be prepared. The elders mutter in alarm. It's not very likely, Elder Knight begins, but I interrupt. It would be more humane to kill him right away. But it would be more practical to question him first, for the safety of Harmonia. And I think it might be helpful if I could at least see him, just a glance, to know if he is a second child. Knowing that will help you decide if whatever he tells you is the truth. Elder Knight ponders a moment. Very well. Just for a moment. As calmly as if I'm conducting a mere business transaction, I follow her deeper into the Hall of Elders. This is the first time I've ever been inside this building. The burnished wood has a gentle glow, and feels more like home than the treehouse bubble. I'm used to walls, and this is the only structure in Harmonia that isn't all or in part see-through. The only place where secrets can be properly kept. I wonder if they're letting the rest of the village know what has happened, what they plan to do. Two elders, robust women in their 40s, stand guard outside an unmarked wooden door. They greet Elder Knight, and look in some surprise at me. But one of them pushes open the door and lets us inside. An elder in his 60s stands by a bedside, a heavy, knobby staff in his hand. In the bed is an unconscious young man, his face red and blistered beneath the dirt, and blood. No, I say. I don't know him. I walk out again, as Elder Knight thanks and praises me. Mom puts an arm around my shoulder. I know it's hard, sweetheart, she says. At least you didn't know him. What if it had been Ash? I ask her softly. She catches her breath in a quiet sob, quickly suppressed. I can't even think about that. She walks me home, then tells me she has to get back to the other elders. When will it happen? I ask. Not until tomorrow morning, I'm sure, she tells me. He's in bad shape. It will be a while before he revives enough to answer questions, if he ever does. If not, well, I guess that would be for the best. I nod, calm and accepting, and walk up the stairs. When I turn around, Mom is still watching me. I school my face until it is perfectly appropriate. Melancholy. Over harsh necessity, serene knowledge of acting for the greater good, and raise my hand in farewell before I walk steadily up the rest of the way. Even when the door closes, I stay calm. Anyone could be watching. I look as normal as can be, until I reach the bathroom, the place most closed off from the rest of Harmonia. Then I fall to my knees, pulling at my hair, screaming and sobbing uncontrollably. It was Lachlan. Lachlan, injured and helpless and alone. One glance was enough to tell me how much he has suffered, not just in his desert crossing, but the whole time since the underground was destroyed. There's a new scar above his eyebrow, and his knuckles are split and scabbed. He's lost weight, too, and though his body is still well-muscled, there is a wasted look to his face. No wonder Mom couldn't tell how old he is. Hardship has aged him in my absence. Oh, great Earth! How did I have the strength to stay calm when I saw him? How could I not fly to his side, kiss his sweet, suffering face, cut his bonds, tear them away with my teeth if I had to? Why didn't I fight the elders, or all of Harmonia, to save him? Because, like Elder Knight said, I can't let my compassion get in the way of hard, cold practicality. I am already a little suspect because I come from Eden. If I show excess concern for the escapee, or even the slightest resistance to their plans, I know that they'll guard me as long as he's alive. Once they realize I know him, they'll assume I'll try to save him. And if any of them have heard my stories, ones I've only really told to Mira and Carnelian, but which might have spread, as stories do, if they know I love him, the only way to help Lachlan is to entirely deflect their suspicion. So I made myself be cold and heartless. I pretended to agree with them. Now, with a last shuddering sob, I straighten up and clench my jaw in firm resolution. I only have until tomorrow morning to save the man I love from certain death. Then, if I do, maybe he can help me save the woman I love too. I have no idea how I'm going to rescue him, but I know I have to look as normal as possible to the rest of Harmonia until I make my move. Unfortunately, I look anything but normal when I open the bathroom door and find Mira standing just outside with her hand poised to knock.
Sorry, I let myself in to talk about... Are you okay? No, stupid question. Obviously you're not. Is it because you were ranked second tier? Well, at least I'm in the second tier club along with you. It'll be okay. I know you'd hope to...
She stares at me more intensely. No, she says. I know you. I know what you've been through. You're not going to break down like this over what is essentially a bad grade. Come on, Rowan. You can tell me. I have misgivings. If the wise elders see nothing wrong with murder for the greater good, if even my mom is ready to accept it, however reluctantly, how can I expect Mira to understand? But she has already agreed to help me get back to Eden to save my friends, and this is part and parcel of that quest. I tell her, and watch her face shift from amazement to angry disbelief.
No one out there even knows someone escaped from Eden, she says indignantly. I heard there was someone being carried on a stretcher, but they said it was Elder Jacques, who twisted his ankle. Can you believe the elders were going to keep this from us?
She is even more surprised when I tell her who it is. She jumps up and down, hugging me.
It's like a legend, a fairy tale, she says excitedly. True love, coincidence, adventure.
And danger, I add. They're going to kill him tomorrow morning. She stares at me in dumbfounded disbelief.
No, she says slowly. You must have made a mistake. All life is precious, animal and human. The elders would never kill someone. Not even someone from Eden. It doesn't make sense.
I tell her the reasons the elders gave, but she's still shaking her head.
No, that's the kind of logic that sounds right if you don't pay close attention, but it isn't.
Not really.
There are so many other alternatives.
Listen, we have to tell everyone else. The rest of Harmonia won't stand for this. We're not murderers. The
The elders think they're protecting the people, but if the people know, they'll put a stop to it. I'm sure of it.
I think of the people I've come to know in Harmonia. Placid, timid Lotta at one end of the spectrum, and Xander, with all his vitriol, at the other. But in the middle, the others are pleasant, kind, earnest people. But are they leaders or followers? Will they think for themselves, if it is easier to let the elders do their thinking for them? And even if they do think it's wrong to kill a stranger who stumbles into their midst, how many of them are willing to act? There is a world of difference between having a private opinion and taking a public stand. They are part of a community, and while there is strength in numbers, there is also weakness. A break in the unity reduces the strength, so everyone is conditioned to go along, not to make waves. That probably works most of the time out here. There's so rarely any source of conflict. I don't agree with Mira. We might get a little help, but the majority will side with the elders. It is a sad case, they'll tell themselves, but it is for the greater good. Then, when it is over, the community will still be whole. I tell Mira my thoughts, and she comes to agree with me. We have to break him out, I say, after she swears to help me. But how? You said he's guarded. We can't fight our neighbors. Of course not, I say, privately thinking that a few unconscious elders hit on the head with a rock would be a small price to pay for Lachlan's life. But we have to get in somehow and then get him out. And not just out of the hall, out of Harmonia. Something strikes Mira. Wait, if you get him out, what are you going to do? I haven't had time to think that far ahead. Are you going to live in the woods? Wait, what am I going to do if they find out I helped? She looks for a moment like she's having misgivings. She just realized that there are huge consequences to what she's contemplating. It is a treason to Harmonia. She could be facing exile from all she has known all her life. Then, a huge grin spreads out over her face. It's just what Carnelian and I always talked about. Oh, great Earth, this is perfect. I have to tell him. He'll be on our side. He'll help. Wait, you're not worried? Rowan, we always fantasized about striking out on our own. Harmonia is great, but can you imagine really living in nature? In a cave or a hut you built yourself? Bathing in a spring, drinking from a birch bark cup, making your own tools from stone. Some people would find it ghastly, but she's talking about it like it is heaven. But people aren't allowed to leave Harmonia. Carnelian and I talked about it, living as close to nature as possible, but we might never be brave enough to do it. But if we save Lachlan, if we flee into the forest... She's laughing now. Oh, Rowan, I knew it as soon as I met you that you were going to be exciting. She's going on about her dream, expanding it to include people we can rescue from Eden. All your friends, your brother, the second children. If Harmonia won't take them, we'll make a place for them. We'll live as we were intended to live, and we won't control or exclude anyone. I'm not so sure people were intended to live that way. If we had time, I'd argue that humans have evolved to make things, to change their surroundings, to provide comforts for themselves, and that intelligence comes from learning moderation in the things we make and change. But this is not the time or place. I'm just glad that Mira is so eager to help me now. We can work out our entire futures later, once we save Lachlan's life. But how do we get in? And how do we get him out again? Mira asks. Maybe we don't, I say. Maybe we make them come out and bring Lachlan with them. I have an idea. Only Mira isn't going to like it. First, I have to make it through the rest of the day. While my brain is a whirl with dreadful thoughts, I have to smile with my neighbors, accept their congratulations. I'm an adult now, and they have officially accepted me as a member of Harmonia. The change is even more noticeable for me than for the other test takers. The natural borns had less to prove. Now the villagers know that Ecopan was right to pick me. It shows that no system is perfect. People have faith in systems all the time, and yet those systems fail them. The system should have weeded out anyone who would defy the community, question the laws, put people at risk. Yet here I am. The day is endless. With infinite slowness, the sun creeps toward the horizon, and I smile and simper and chat. I look sincere when the older members of Harmonia talk to me about the responsibility that awaits me. I nod earnestly as they tell me of the need to be a role model for the younger generation. As I socialize, I pick up things here and there. Bits of dried moss, the white gauzy fluff of a seed head, curls of bark. I play with them absently as I talk, slipping them into my pockets when no one is looking. Even if they saw, they probably wouldn't remark on it. Soon my pockets are stuffed with soft, dry bits of plant matter. Kids swarm over me, asking about the test. They never wonder why I hug them all extra tight. Such precious lives. I think about the children of the underground. What good is any society that lets children suffer? The festivities aren't quite as exuberant as the Wolf Moon Festival, but there is an air of celebration at painful odds with my internal state. The honey cakes are dry in my mouth. The pure spring water tastes stale. And still the sun creeps slowly toward night. Mira comes up to me near evening. I talked to Carnelian. He needed some convincing. She gives me a wry look. You know how he feels about adventure. He is totally on board with the rescue in theory. It just took me a while to persuade him that the risk is worth the reward, and that the risk isn't that great in the first place. But it is, I tell her. I'm feeling guilty that I've gotten you involved. What if... She puts her fists on her hips. As of this morning, I am an adult, just like you. You haven't gotten me involved. I chose to be involved, because it's the right thing to do. But the consequences are suddenly greater, I say. Before this morning, I would have said the worst that could happen to us if we defy the elders is, I don't know, a strict talking to. It never occurred to me that they'd consider executing someone. Now that's on the table, not just for him, but maybe for you and Carnelian if we get caught. We're citizens of Harmonia, she says. I'm sure they wouldn't do that to us. And that's if we get caught. We won't. You're so sure? I ask. It's a good plan. It took a while to talk her around to it. On the surface, it seemed to contradict the teachings she was raised with. Now, though, she's entirely on board. Later, Carnelian brings me a strange bouquet. It is made of clusters of dried cattails, the brown sausage-like seed clusters near the top of flexible reeds. He has made it pretty, with curlicues of dried grass and ribbons dyed purple and pink. Congratulations, he says, and kisses me awkwardly on the cheek, before giving me a wink that could be seen a mile away and shambling off. He's not the best co-conspirator, but I'm glad of his help. Night falls, and still we wait. Everyone believes I am happy. As it gets later, everyone believes I am tired. I fake a yawn and get sympathetic jokes about resting while I can. Adult responsibilities begin in the morning. I say goodnight to a few people, ostentatiously so they will remember later. To Morgan, the potter, I say, "It's funny how some nights when I'm extra tired, it's even harder to fall asleep. I just stare at the ceiling. It's like I'm too tired to fall asleep. Does that ever happen to you?" I cock my head, waiting for him to dole out the words of wisdom he loves to share. In this case, I happen to know how he deals with sleepless nights. "Moonlit walks," Morgan says. "That's the ticket. Just get out under the night sky, all alone with your own thoughts and nothing but the frogs and the breeze for company. It puts things in perspective. After I walk by my lonesome under the moonlight, I sleep like a baby." I thank him for his advice and promise I'll try it if I have trouble falling asleep. There, I've done it. No one, not even the watchful elders, thinks anything in particular is on my mind. I'm a good, obedient little member of society, following the rules unthinkingly. I've even set up my cover story, in case I'm caught late at night when the village is in bed. I'm just following Morgan's recommendations. He'll vouch for me if I'm caught wandering before I can put my plan into action. Fooling my mom is going to be harder. She's waiting for me at home, deep consternation on her face. There you are. I thought you'd be home sooner. I yawn, not faked this time, and tell her that a lot of people wanted to talk to the newest official members of society. In fact, they were asking about you. I was too upset to socialize, she says. I'm surprised you were able to. She bites her lip. She doesn't want to accuse me of being heartless enough to enjoy myself while an innocent man was condemned. Life goes on, I say with a shrug. I don't like it, but... I break off. I can't push indifference too far with her. She knows me too well. Rowan, I was thinking. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to approach the other elders again. After they've had the night to sleep on it, they might see things differently. If I appeal to their conscience, their humanity, they might spare him, at least for a while, so they can think things through more carefully. She waits for my happy response. That's great, Mom, I say. I'm sure you'll be able to convince them. I start to head upstairs to my room. Rowan, my mom begins, and I stop on the steps. What? Oh, never mind, honey. Sleep tight. You too, Mom. I go up 3 more steps before I stop, then whirl and run back down to her. Oh, Mom, I love you so much. These last months with you, after I thought you were dead. I've been so lucky to have them. To have just a little more time with you. Rowan, what's gotten into you? She asks as she hugs me back, half suffocated by the fierceness of my embrace. I just don't know if I tell you often enough how much I love you. You are the most amazing woman, and I hope every day I can make you proud of me. Sweetheart, she says as she strokes my hair. I am always proud of you. I'm always on your side. For a second, I study her face, wanting so much to tell her what I'm planning. She might help me. But I think of those 2 warring urges within her, to keep me safe and make me happy. The first 16 years of my life were governed by the former. She made so many sacrifices to keep me safely hidden behind our house's walls. Happiness was part of that sacrifice, hers and mine. Now, though, she has loosened up so much, urging me to have adventures. I still think deep down that yearning for safety prevails. I want to think she'd help me save Lachlan, but I think her first thought would be to save me. So I say nothing, but let her go and head to my bed without another backward look. Even though I know it might be the last time I ever see her. Every time I try to think about that, pragmatic Yarrow stops me. You're not going to let Lachlan be killed, she points out correctly. So don't think too much about the consequences. None of them are going to sway you. When you rescue Lachlan, you'll have to leave. That's the only option. Don't think beyond that. Anything can happen. Sure, I whisper to her. That's exactly the kind of attitude a party girl like you would have. Don't worry about what's going to happen once the sun comes up, if the party is still raging through the night. Still, her philosophy helps me get through the next hour without going crazy. I lie on my bed, under the covers but fully clothed, and wait for the house to grow quiet. I spend my time thinking about Lachlan, wondering if he is awake, in pain. It is torment. When I'm sure Mom is in bed and everything is perfectly still, I count very slowly to 100. Then I do it again. A deep breath for each count. Finally, I roll out of bed and feel in the darkness until I find my shoes. Holding them in one hand, I pick up the pack I've prepared and throw it over the other shoulder. The broken lower stems of Carnelian's bouquet litter my bedroom floor. There are no lights outside, and the nightly bonfire in the village green has been doused. Those artificial logs are designed to burn without pollutants and extinguish themselves after a set time. Environmentally conscious people living in the heart of a forest are very careful with fire. With painstaking caution, I creep downstairs and let myself out. The night is still. Even the owls are quiet tonight. My footsteps sound loud to me in the heavy brush, but I tell myself that no one is awake to hear me. Carefully, avoiding the houses and sticking to the shadows beneath the trees, I make my way toward the Hall of Elders. I don't go directly to it, but skirt around in the deep woods until I come to its rear. I know that some of the elders live there. Elder Knight is one of them. Others have their own homes and only go to the hall for official business. On this night, I'm sure there will be more elders there than usual, guarding the prisoner. But there was no one in the back. If this were Eden, there would be security cameras and bots around any important building. I wouldn't have a chance. Here, though, they only guard the obvious points. The front, and only, door, and the prisoner himself. Certain that I have the back to myself, I retreat into the woods for a moment, gathering what I need. Near my hiding place, I separate it into piles according to size. For a long time, I crouch in the branches of a rhododendron, watching the back of the wooden hall like a cougar watching its prey. I know that Mira is watching the building from her house, which is nearby. Carnelian is with her. She's waiting for the very obvious signal that will tell her it is time to play her part. Finally, when a half hour has passed without any sign of a sentry, I take what I've brought and what I've gathered to the back of the building. I've stolen a paring knife from the communal kitchen, a small, wickedly sharp blade, mostly used to peel and slice root vegetables. I tell myself I won't put it to any more deadly use tonight. This is a tool, not a weapon. I won't let anyone get hurt tonight. I cut a long slice into one of the dried cattails Carnelian gave me, taking care not to cut all the way through to my fingers. Though it looked solid on the outside, the size and shape of an ear of corn, it explodes into chaotic fluff under my knife. Tightly packed in the cattail are the plant seeds, millions of them. Freed from their compression, they make a mass of cloudy whiteness 10 times the size of the original cattail. I open all of them the same way, patting the fluff into a ball. Bits float around my head, tickling my nose, and I have to stifle a sneeze. I put the fluff into a tent of twigs, propped up against the wall of the Hall of Elders. The dried branches, like slender fingers, trap the white cloud. Heftier branches fortify the structure. Larger logs, as thick as my arm, lay ready nearby. Then, with a deep breath, I pull out a piece of flint from my pack. The elders taught me how to make a fire as part of our survival training. However, they frown upon its use except in the most dire emergencies. Cooking fires, hearths for heat, were never a problem when human populations were low. After all, fires are a natural phenomenon. Started by lightning in tinder-dry forests, some trees and ecosystems actually depend on fires to survive. But fires also make pollutants, the elders taught me. One person, one village using fire won't hurt the earth. But the symbology is as important as the reality. And to use fire, real fire, not our artificial logs, indiscriminately, is to show a disregard for the earth. So though we learn to make fire in case we are trapped away from Harmonia in the dead of winter, we aren't supposed to make a fire with real wood, ever. What I'm doing now feels like sacrilege. It also feels indescribably thrilling as I strike the piece of flint against the metal blade and see a spark fly into the intensely combustible cattail tinder. It ignites in an audible whoosh, and I jerk back as the heat hits my face. The fire burns through the cattails quickly, leaving ash behind, but the twigs catch too, their dried bark singeing and crumbling as the wood burns. I blow on it gently, and like a living thing, the fire feeds and grows. When it is well established, I lay the larger logs on it, propped up in a triangle against the building. After a while, they start to burn too. And so do the wooden planks of the Hall of Elders. The smolder is slow, creeping into the wood. The fire has to be encouraged, given just enough wood, but not too much. Enough air to give it the oxygen it needs to combust, but not so much that it is blown out. A new fire is a fragile thing. But I help it grow strong. There is something so primal about this real fire. A smell. A feel that the fake fire just can't match. The dancing red and orange flames are hypnotic. The first human to tame fire must have felt like a god. Then I feel ashamed. The elders are right. We are just weak humans who would descend into destructive behavior within a generation if we weren't kept in control. I can feel the urges in myself. "You're only human," Yarrow says mockingly from inside my head. Or is she trying to be reassuring? This fire is for a purpose. To save a life. This is an exception, I tell myself. I'm not someone who would harm the earth. The flames are leaping high now, higher than me, embracing the wall. What's on the other side? Lachlan's cell is on the opposite end, but someone might be sleeping right here. Any moment now, the fire will burn through the walls and smoke will start to fill the Hall of Elders. I can only hope that no one will be hurt. "You don't really care," Yarrow whispers to me. "As long as you save Lachlan." "That's not true," I snap back at her. I want her to be wrong, but I've already shown that I can kill for what I believe in. And if the elders are advocating executing someone who has committed no crime, who only wants the freedom it is every human's right to pursue. No, I fervently hope that no one gets hurt. But if they do, it is worth it in the battle against what I know in my heart is wrong. "Sure," Yarrow says infuriatingly. "But would you do all this if it was a stranger from Eden, and not Lachlan?" "I hope I would always do the right thing," I tell her. "Funny how the right thing with you always seems to involve doing a lot of wrongish things along the way," she points out. I hide in the woods again, far from the angry fire, positioning myself now so that I can see the front of the hall. Is it taking too long? What if the place is filling with smoke so fast that the elders inside just pass out, dying in their beds before anyone can spread the alarm? Have I just doomed not only Lachlan, but the elders too, to a terrible death? Clenching my jaw, I watch and wait. Somewhere out there, Mira and Carnelian are watching too. Long moments tick by. Then, finally, "Fire!" someone gasps, barely audible. An elder runs out of the hall, trying to shout a warning, but mostly just choking. Almost immediately, Mira and Carnelian run up to him. "Too fast. Will he be suspicious?" No, the elder is too distraught to notice that they just happen to be nearby, to respond so quickly. He must know all the people here will take decisive swift action. He's not surprised that two responsible young people are on hand to help. I see the three of them confer briefly. The elder looks like he is going to run for more help, which would be disastrous. We need as few people here as possible. Carnelian catches his arm and points inside. I know he's saying that any delay might doom those who remain in the building. Together, the three of them run in, and the general alarm isn't sounded. The rest of Harmonia sleeps soundly. How I wish I could be with them. But though I've defrayed most suspicion, it would all return if the elders saw me there now. It makes sense that Mira and Carnelian are on hand. A happy couple kissing under her family's treehouse, running to help at the first sign of danger. Only coincidence. But if the girl from Eden showed up at a suspicious fire where an Eden prisoner was held, all their suspicion would come flooding back. They'd try to restrain me. "Then you'd have to use that knife for something other than vegetables," Yarrow jibes. At last, the elder and Mira come out supporting a coughing woman. Mira runs back in, and she and Carnelian come out with another man. In and out they go, bringing five more people out, until at last Elder Knight emerges, walking unassisted, with a cloth pressed to her face. But where is Lachlan? Are they going to leave him to die?
No, there he is. Carnelian comes out at the head of a stretcher, with one of the guards behind.
Oh no, Lachlan is still unconscious. This is going to make things a lot harder. Running tends to help in an escape.
I see lights come on in nearby treehouses. Any moment, half the village will be thronged around us. There is only the smallest window of opportunity. Come on, Mira. Do it now. I see her run out of the building one last time, her face smeared with soot. She staggers to the elders and gasps out the story we decided on. I can't hear her from my hiding place, but I know what she's saying.
There's someone trapped in one of the rooms. A beam fell across the door and I can't move it. Quick, the fire is almost there. I need everyone or he'll burn to death.
The elders all follow her. Inside, in the smoky darkness, I know Mira will lose them and run back out again. Now is my moment. Breaking from cover, I dash to Lachlan's side. I can't waste time looking at him, but the glimpse I get of his haggard, unconscious face makes me fear the worst.
Stop!
Elder Knight cries, coming at me as though she could physically stop me. She must have been just inside in the shadows where I couldn't see her.
How dare you! Help! Help!
I clench my fist around the hilt of my knife. Part of me wants to strike her. Stupid old woman. So bound by rules that she can't even protect a helpless, desperate, harmless young man. What good is wisdom if you put it to this use? I don't know if it is Yarrow or me thinking these thoughts. I don't know what I would have done if I was alone. Luckily, this is part of the plan. Carnelian comes up behind her with a big hemp sack, the kind we usually use for storing apples, and slips it over her head. While she struggles, he winds a cord around her arms and legs. Her shouts are muffled as he carries her just past the edge of the woods and lays her down gently. Someone will find her eventually. Mira runs out, a look of fierce glee on her face.
Let's go,
she says, and joins me at the front of the stretcher. We each take half, while Carnelian picks up the back. Before the elders can realize they've been tricked, before any more villagers come to help with the fire, we've carried Lachlan into the woods. In the confusion of the fire, it will be a while before anyone realizes what happened. When the elders come out to see Elder Knight gone, they'll think she commandeered some villagers to take Lachlan somewhere safe. With her voice muffled in the sack and the cacophony of rescue efforts, no one might find Elder Knight and learn the truth until daybreak, a few hours from now. We did it. Everything went perfectly. I can't believe it. So many things could have gone wrong. But here we are, with Lachlan safe. We're free. Or as free as we can be, carrying a heavy, unconscious man, with an entire village about to come after us, maybe in minutes, maybe in hours. Him being unconscious for very long wasn't part of the plan. Feeling a sense of deja vu, I try to wake him, but he remains completely out of it. We were counting on him being mobile. Having to carry him will slow us down so much we might be caught. We have to find a place to hide until he wakes up, I say. But where? Carnelian asks. This close to the village, there's no place they don't know about. There's nowhere to hide. Mira and I exchange a look, both thinking the same thing. And it could be hours before he wakes up, Carnelian continues. We don't know what they gave him, and... There's one place, she says. It's a bit of a hike, but not too far. We can hole up there, and then when he's awake, make a break for it. If we're careful about our tracks, and if they don't come for us until morning, and if he wakes up relatively soon, we should be okay.
That's a lot of ifs, Yarrow comments.
If only there was a way to wake him up faster, I muse. The place we're going might be able to help with that too. I'm just not sure. She bites her lower lip. I wish I had paid more attention. She won't tell us any more now, though, but leads us onward as we laboriously hike with our heavy burden. We clamber over roots, through tangles of vines and thorns, and all the while,
I just want to take Lachlan in my arms, cover him with kisses, weep just to see him again.
How come I never knew about this place? Carnelian asks when we finally make it. It seems like it would be a perfect place to be alone with your boyfriend, and... That's why I never showed you, she quips. She parts the thick tangle of rhododendron branches in exactly the right spot and unlatches the well-hidden door.
We set him down near the fountain of the strange half-man, half-fish creature. Lachlan looks like death, so limp and helpless, his cheeks gaunt, still covered in the dried dust of his desert crossing. Mira is busying herself with some plants. This is so not the time for gardening, Yarrow quips, but I pay attention when Mira comes back with an assortment of leaves, blossoms, and a narrow yellowish root. She kneels down by Lachlan, next to me, holding the collection of plants in her lap.
We all learn about the healing powers of plants, she says.
True, that has been part of my training these last 3 months, but after a lifetime, without any living, growing things beyond a few hardy kinds of algae and moss, I'm afraid the plants mostly look alike to me. Marvelously beautiful, of course, but I think I'm too overwhelmed simply by the fact that plants exist to pay attention to how many lobes a leaf has, or the number of petals on a flower. I'm making progress, but it is slow. My father was fascinated by medicinal plants. After he got sick, she gulps, and it is a moment before she can go on. He tried every remedy the elders could suggest, but nothing worked. So as he got worse and had less to lose, he started trying the plants in this garden. They don't grow anywhere else, you see, so we hoped there might be something that could work, something we'd never find in the woods. One thing he tried put him to sleep, another made him have visions. He tried different combinations. One mixture helped with the cramping that came with his wasting disease. Another made his mind feel like it was floating, so he didn't worry about the future. Other herbs and combinations had less beneficial results. One made him vomit for days. Another slowed his heartbeat so much I thought he was gonna die then and there. But this combination, she says as she holds up the plant material, made him exceptionally alert. His pulse increased, he couldn't sit still, and he didn't sleep for 2 days. So I was thinking, maybe if we give that combination to Lachlan, it will wake him up. It's worth a shot, I say. The longer we stay near the village, the greater our chances that someone will track us and try to stop us.
There's only one problem, Mira says.
Of course there is, Yarrow quips. Although it's nice to have only one for a change. Usually there are a dozen problems at least. When my father tried his different medicines, he took them home and made them into tea. We don't have any way of doing that here.
We have water, Carnelian suggests, gesturing to the fountain.
And we have fire, I say, taking out the flint.
But we don't have anything to boil it in, Mira says.
My shoulders slump in defeat.
Of course, he was only in the beginning of his experiments. Maybe the plants don't need heat to bring out their properties. I don't know. But the bottom line is we can't just shove the plants into his mouth. He can't chew them if he's unconscious. So one of us is going to have to chew up the leaves, flowers, and the root, and then...
There's nothing I wouldn't do for Lachlan, even chewing up nasty, bitter plants that make my tongue go numb and spitting the resulting juice into his mouth.
We will never speak of this again, Yarrow says.
For a while, nothing happens to Lachlan. If what I'm feeling is any indication, though, this should definitely do the trick. I did my best to spit everything out after I chewed it, but I must have swallowed some, because I feel my heart racing as if I'd chugged 3 super-caffeinated drinks. My heart is racing, and I can feel my fingers and toes begin to twitch, itching for activity. For a long moment, Lachlan just lies there, same as before, his face slack. Then, I see his eyes start to move beneath closed eyelids, back and forth, like he's following some frenetic game. Soon, his eyes flutter open. He moans, and instantly I'm pushing his hair away from his brow. He blinks blearily, but then his golden second-child eyes manage to focus on me.
I stroke the cold sweat off his cheek. Lachlan, you're safe. With the entire village coming in search of us within a few hours at best,